audio is fine. Thank you, Klansman. Clanfederian, if I'm pronouncing that right, that sounds like a Welsh word. In any case, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to, wow, Bloodlines. This is June 3rd, 2018. We're going to be continuing our series on the Book of Maccabees, today, Chapter 7. And our technical difficulties in starting the show this morning, we didn't have any. It started correctly. Hooray, hooray. All right, Pastor Steve.
All right, I just want to let everybody know that Maccabees is not a type of cookie. That's a macaroon, okay?
Okay, you get half a demerit for that.
You get half, well.
At least it was educational.
Yeah, but the cookie is half baked.
Yeah,
so
right.
I guess it half.
But you know what? If you talk to a Judeo-Christian, especially a Judeo-Christian pastor, they might be confused because they don't know from macaroons and Maccabees. Okay.
No, they don't touch that with a stolen 10-foot pole.
Right. Yeah, they prefer macaroons to Maccabees. So they avoid
okay,
it.
Okay, I'm looking at the chat room. Can somebody? How's my audio out there? Is my audio all right? I made a few changes here.
Okay. Let's see.
I'm waiting for somebody to say
yeah,
something.
Yeah. Well, you're looking good on my VU meter. You're looking real good on my VU meter.
Says so, fine. Thank you, Brother Hebert.
Okay. Very good.
Okay.
All right. So we
okay. Well, I have sent to the archives all of the Apocrypha. I have finished it up. It will the last apocryphal show will be on the 6th of June and the 8th of June. I will begin in the New Testament in the book of Matthew. The New Testament studies are going to be intense. I have so many years of notes and references, so I'm going to go slow enough. Those books are fairly small compared to a lot of the Old Testament books. They're not several hundred pages long. So I'm going to go slowly and really lay the references on everybody. So when I start on the 8th, you're going to want to have writing material close by to write down all this stuff, because I'm really going to tear it up.
Are you learning how to speak Greek? That would be awesome. Right?
Yes, well.
Where's a try?
Uzo. Right? I know Uzo, yeah.
Uzi. I know Uzi, too.
No, not Uzi.
Oh, that's a gun.
I said Uzo, that's a drink. And okay. As long as you know that and you're in Greece, you just walk up to the bartender and say, Uzo!
Right.
And that you're cool.
Yeah, and everybody freezes.
You got it.
I think you got an Uzi.
Got it covered.
Yeah. Well, I know
it's
ethnos.
Like, going to Mexico, you only need to learn one word.
Right, right.
Cerveza.
Right.
That means beer.
That's
beer.
Right.
Yeah, cerveza.
You got to know that word in every language.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, then you can get along with people. All right. Okay, but you're not totally done.
Or you could drink enough that you just don't care.
Yeah, really. I know a lot of people like that. But you're not totally done with the Apocrypha when we get done with Second Maccabees, because we're doing these.
No. My solo shows.
Your solo shows. Okay.
Are done.
Good.
When we're done with all the Maccabees, you and I will post all of those on my website as well in a separate file.
Good.
Same way. Good. I have just the Book of Jasher in one file.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no point, seeing as how you and I are really working Maccabees over.
Oh, yeah.
Doing solo shows on Maccabees.
Right.
I really need to get into the New Testament.
Yes, yes. I can sense you're intense about it.
You aren't going to, I'm really going to unleash, folks.
Good.
I mean, I've got so many years of study and every possible New Testament study book you can get, and we are going to have a rocking good time. I can guarantee you that.
Very good. Very good. Yes. And so the New Testament is not a changeover from a Jewish Old Testament to a Christian New Testament. That's garbage.
No, it is not.
It's a continuation of the covenant people.
All of this stuff, including what we have been doing, including the Apocrypha, it's all one testament.
That's right.
It just tells the story of the new covenant that was promised in the Old Testament.
And the new covenant is made to the exact same people as the old covenant was. Don't let anybody tell you any different. That's a lie.
And the same rules apply.
That's right. The commandments have not done away with. The only thing that was done away with was the sacrifice of the Passover, the literal sacrifice of the Passover.
The animal sacrifice is full. Filled.
It's fulfilled.
Because Yeshua was the final Passover lamb because the blood of bulls and goats was only putting it off for a year.
That's why he said, I come not to destroy the law, but to fulfill.
Yep.
That's what he said.
Not one
jot
or tittle will pass away unless heaven and earth pass away.
Amen.
And guess what, sports fans? We're still here.
Yes.
Well, let's get into this. We're going to start in chapter 7 of 1 Maccabees, and this is the expedition of Bacchides and Alcimus, and the first verse starts about 161 B.C. That's what the notes say here. I am reading from the New Revised Standard Version because this particular book that I have has so many notes that it's just incredible.
Okay.
And I have gone back where they have Greekized a lot of stuff, substituted the Lord for Yahweh. I've replaced the sacred name where it belongs, and the Hebrew names, because this was all originally written in Hebrew, but the scrolls are not in existence except in fragments.
Right.
At this day and age, they've been lost due to just physical deterioration. But I have gone through and made the notes. A lot of these people do have Greek names, okay? They spoke Greek for one reason. It was the business language of the day. Like French was a business language for quite some time. English has been a business language. There's a lot of Japanese that speak English because they do business here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when they're talking about scriptural stuff and the holy name, etc., that needs to be put back into Hebrew because that's what it was originally spoken in. But people like named Antiochus, well, that's not a Hebrew name. So why say it in Hebrew? It doesn't mean anything. Accuracy is the key. Accuracy, accuracy, accuracy. And where there are multiple readings, because there are several versions of these books, I will give you both readings. I will stop and I will give you an alternate reading. So you get both takes on the subject. I have a lot of those notes here too. The aim of VFR is to teach, and we don't want to promulgate any lies, so we take great care in what we are putting out. at least I know I do, and I know Eli does, we are sticklers for accuracy. If you listen to any of David James' shows, he does explanations and really gets into word meanings, too. That's another one that is stickler for accuracy. He does his homework before his shows, okay?
Yeah, Judeo pastors criticize us and mock us for doing word studies, right?
Well, that's
the show
fine.
We did Friday. Yeah.
They can go with the rest of the goats.
Yeah, you
okay? got
to learn English, they tell us, right? The English King James is just fine. Give me that old English Bible. Give me that old. No, wait a minute. Yeah. No, it was written in Greek and Hebrew, folks. And we got to know the meanings of those words. Back to you. Sorry to interrupt.
That is correct. Let's get started here in chapter 7. This is verse 1. A lot of these, if they have an ongoing conversation, it goes into multiple verses. And if I break it up, it breaks the flavor of what the guy is saying, so I'll give verse numbers when I'm done with the sentence.
Okay.
Okay. Verse 1, in the 151st year, that's 161 B.C., Demetrius, son of Seleucus, or Seleucus, okay, set out from Rome, okay, sailed with a few men to a town by the sea, and there began to reign. Verse 2. As he was entering the royal palace of his ancestors, the army seized Antiochus and Lysias to bring them to him. Verse 3. But when this act became known to him, he said, "Do not let me see their faces." Verse 4. So the army killed him, and Demetrius took his seat on the throne of his kingdom. Verse 5.
This is where Israel's undoing is recorded. Verse 5.
Then there came to him all the renegade and godless men of Israel. Those are the traitors like we have today.
Right.
Okay.
Judeos.
They were led by Alcimus, who wanted to be high priest. He wanted to have an agenda. These are people that are following the Babylonian Talmud.
Yeah, Alcimus is an Israelite, but he's a traitor.
Well, how many traitors have we got in Israel today that aid and abet our enemies?
Amen.
For ill-gotten gain, for greed.
All right.
Same deal.
Or to stay out of jail. Right?
They haven't changed. Verse 6. They brought to the king this accusation against the people. Yehuda and his brothers, that's Judas, okay?
Right, Maccabeus, Judas
but
Maccabeus.
His name is Yehuda, okay?
Right.
Yehuda and his brothers have destroyed all your friends and have driven us out of our land. Verse 7. Now then, send a man whom you trust. Let him go and see all the ruin that Yehudas has brought on us and on the land of the king, and let him punish them and all who help them. In other words, help put us in power. We want to rule, not him. There you go. That's the modus operandi of the traitors.
Yeah, making treaties with the enemy. We're not supposed to do that anyway.
Well,
this is a violation of Yahweh's law We are not supposed to make treaties.
Like John McCain and all the others?
Right.
Well, this isn't
high priest.
It?
Yeah, right. This high priest should know that Yahweh forbids. Our only covenant is with Yahweh. We're not supposed to make covenants with the other nation, except when we approach them for war or peace. Are you going to live peaceably with us? If they say yes, then we dictate the terms. If they say no, we kick the bejesus out of them. All right, that's what we do.
That's it.
You know, and you don't make treaties with enemies. You simply do not do that. So this is a total betrayal.
Well, that's like the Gibeonites. They knew that Israel was destroying all these other people, so they tricked Israel into making a covenant.
Right.
And they said, yep, we tricked you, so let us be hewers of wood and drawers of water for you.
Yeah.
In other words, that's better than being dead.
Right. They lived
under
tribute.
They were killing all these other Canaanites and the Gibeonites.
Yeah.
Because once they made a covenant in Yahweh's name, they couldn't break it.
They lived under tribute to Israel from
they
that.
Lived, they were servants. Well,
yes.
After all the dust settles and Yeshua is reigning and New Jerusalem is here, those that are non-Israelites that have not been direct enemies and opposed Yahweh or tried to harm Israel will live. They're not, the exterminationist theory is wrong. They're going to kill the enemies.
Right.
But those that are not direct enemies that recognize who we are and who the Messiah is and who Yahweh is will live. They will live normal human lifespans. They will not have eternal life like we will have. They will not have new bodies. They will live their allotted lifespan, and they will be outside of New Jerusalem, and they will grow crops, and they will do this, and they will do that, and the whole earth will prosper
under Adamic dominion.
All the GMO and all the damage that was done by the adversary's children is going to be repaired.
Amen.
So that exterminationist theory is wrong. Only the enemies of Yahweh, the Edomites, etc., and the mongrel Talmud worshipers, they will be destroyed.
Right. And that's according to Genesis 1, where dominion was given to the Adamic race. We lost it. Adam and Eve lost it, but it will be restored to us. And Zechariah chapter 14 clearly states that those of the other races who do not hate us or partake of violence against us, they will be spared. They will be forced. Every knee shall bow. They will be forced to observe the Feast of Tabernacles every year under our dominion.
They will be under the same law we are. They just won't have the eternal blessings.
Right.
That we will have. That's reserved only for true Israel.
For
but
the covenant
rest,
people. Yes.
They will be blessed as well.
In a different way. In a lesser way.
In their allotted lifespan. We're not going to rule them as tyrants. There will be no need. They're going to be given the law as we have been given. This is how you will behave. Here's
a
list
the rod
of
iron.
What you do.
When he returns, he will rule with a rod of iron. That's what that means.
This is what you will do. This is how you will live. And if you stray outside of that, the punishment is going to be harsh.
Swift justice. Okay, very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Verse 8. So the king chose Bacchides, one of the king's friends, governor of the province beyond the river. He was a great man in the kingdom and was faithful to the king. Verse 9. He sent him, and with him he sent the ungodly Alcimus, whom he made high priest. Okay. And he commanded him to take vengeance on the Israelites. So these people weren't Israelites. They were going to take vengeance on the Israelites.
Yes. Do you think Alcinous had made a league already with the Edomites before even approaching? Do you think Alcinous...
Alcinous has dubious lineage.
Oh, okay. All right.
He wormed his way in. Okay.
All right.
Remember when they started circumcising and accepting Edomites?
Yeah, that was under John Hyrcanus much later.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Well, this guy's an early dude. Okay.
It's plausible.
Do they worm their way in? They do it slowly.
Sure.
Okay. Verse 10. So they marched away and came with a large force into the land of Yehuda. And he sent messengers to Yaudas and his brothers with peaceable but treacherous words. Modus operandi again. Okay. Lying, treacherous, betrayal. That's how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
Hasn't changed, has it?
No.
Verse 11. But they paid no attention to their words, for they saw that they had come with a large force. Verse 12. Then a group of scribes appeared in a body before Alcimus and Bacchides to ask for just terms. Well, that's like two wolves and a sheep voting on who, what to have for lunch.
That's where Benjamin Franklin got that story from.
Yeah, right.
He read Maccabees.
Yeah. Verse 13. Well, it was included in all the Bibles till they took them out.
That's right.
They don't want people to read this stuff.
Those books were in the King James until actually...
Yeah, you can get versions of the King James, the old versions... And it has the Apocrypha in it.
That's right.
You can still get it. You can get that on eSword.
Yes, absolutely. I've got several KJV Bibles with the Apocrypha in them. They're easily
available. Well, I'm using this one because of the huge amount of notes, and I've added to the notes. This poor Bible is terribly written in.
Okay.
Verse 13. The Hasidians were first among the Israelites to seek peace from them.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 14, for they said, a priest of the line of Aharon has come with the army, and he will not harm us. Really?
Mm-hmm.
Alimus, or he, spoke peaceable words to them and swore this oath to them. We will not seek to injure you or your friends. Verse 16. Listen to this, folks. This is what he said. Verse 16. So they trusted him, but he seized 60 of them and killed them in one day, in accordance with the word that was written. And this is verse 17. And you can reference Psalms 79, verse 2 and 3. That's Psalm 79, verse 2 and 3. The flesh of your faithful ones and their blood they poured out all around Jerusalem. And there was no one to bury them. That's Psalm 79, 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 8, the betrayal, yes. Lying, murder.
Yeah. Either by a traitor Israelite or by a half-breed.
Well, they're some of the worst.
Yeah, right.
They're twice the child of hell.
Mm-hmm. The proselytes.
All right. verse 18.
Okay. Okay, then, here, hold on. Let me just switch quickly. There's an article by Mary D. Hussey about the origin of the Pharisees. It's titled Origin of the Name Pharisee. And she has this to say about the Hasidians. And, of course, we have what, Hasidic Jews today? Okay, that's where they get this word from. And she says, there must be a reason why the party called Hasidians at the time of the Maccabean uprising was later called Pharisees. Okay. So
that's where the Jews get their name.
Yeah,
Hasid.
And Pharisee. Okay.
The Hasid. Reason,
yeah, now yeah. She says.
The Hasidic reason, Jews.
Right, exactly. The reason for changing the name so obviously suitable as to the quote-unquote pious to the quote-unquote separatists must be sought in some event which at the time of its occurrence made their separation from the rest of the nation their most conspicuous feature. Well, what was the most conspicuous feature here? Aren't we being told that they're traitors posing as real Israelite priests? Isn't that what this is?
Well, don't they pose as Americans and try to destroy America?
Exactly. Okay.
All right.
So they had to be
and
separate because they were...
Some of them pose as Christians today.
Right,
and
yeah.
They teach false doctrine.
Yeah, they were posing as Israelites, but they were in fact traitors to mislead the people. And of course, now they're in league with the Greeks here to destroy the Maccabees. Back to you.
Well, that's what the Hasidic Jews, they're called the pious ones.
Right.
But they are not.
They're not. They're lawbreakers.
They're not. They are a mirror image of what pious should be.
Exactly.
They're the reverse of it. Okay?
Yeah.
Verse 18. Then the fear and dread of them fell on all the people, for they said, there is no truth or justice in them, for they have violated the agreement and the oath that they swore. Hmm. You know, you need a ton of bricks to fall on you.
Right.
Well, yeah. Evidently, some people do. We're having that problem today. What does it take to wake some people up?
Right.
And some will never wake up. They don't want to wake up.
Well, imposters always pretend to be pious. Isn't that the case?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does not the devil appear as an angel of light?
Right. There you go.
Okay. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 19. Then Bacchides withdrew from Jerusalem and encamped in Beth Zaith, and he sent and seized many of the men who had deserted to him and some of the people and killed them and threw them into a great pit. These are people that came over to him, and then they deserted. Because it reads below, or many of his men who had deserted.
Okay.
He seized many of the men to him, okay? Because that's misleading the way they have it read.
Right. They probably didn't understand.
So he regathered the deserters.
And slew them.
And some of the people and killed them and threw them into a great pit, okay? Verse 20, he placed Alcimus, that same rotten guy, in charge of the country and left with him a force to help him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Bacchides went back to the king. All right.
Okay, so Alcimus had a foreign army just as Herod. Alcimus had the Greek army, and Herod had the Roman army to occupy.
There you go, mirror image, same guy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they're trying to get the UN troops in the United States.
Right.
Foreign army.
Right.
Wake up, people. Mm-hmm. Wake up. verse 21. Alcimus struggled to maintain his high priesthood, and all, I'm going to read because it continues on, and all who were troubling their people joined him. They gained control of the land of Yehuda and did great damage in Israel. Now, that's verse 21 and 22.
Mm-hmm. Traitors assembling together against Judah.
And Yehuda, this is verse 23, and Yehuda saw all the wrongs that Alcimus and those with him had done among the Israelites. It was more than the Gentiles or nations
yes.
had done.
Mm-hmm. Now it says Israelites instead of Jews. This is the correct terminology.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 24. So he went out into all the surrounding parts of Judea, or Yehuda, the land of Yehuda, taking vengeance on those who had deserted and preventing those in the city from going out into the country. In other words, he blockaded the cities. Verse 25. When Alcimus saw that Yehuda and those with him had grown strong and realized that he could not withstand them, he returned to the king and brought malicious charges against them. As if Yehudas really cares what he says about him.
Yeah.
Because if he would have caught him, he would have killed him.
Right.
Now, here's the next subsection, starting with verse 26. Nicanor in Judea. Okay. Verse 26. Then the king sent Nicanor, one of his honored princes who hated and detested Israel, and he commanded him to destroy the people. Verse 27. So Nicanor came to Jerusalem with a large force and treacherously sent to Yehuda and his brothers this peaceful message. Let there be no fighting between you and me.
I come for peace.
I come with a few men to see you face to face in peace.
Oh, yeah, right. The army's over the hill.
Yeah, look this way. They're coming up behind him, you know.
Right.
Verse 29. So he came to Yehuda, and they greeted one another peaceably, but the enemy were preparing to kidnap Yehuda.
This is great stuff. I mean, I would love to make a movie, right? Mm. Out of this
absolute
text, it's absolutely vivid. It's vivid. I can see what's happening here, and I can see the actors portraying these people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But these books are so terribly ignored. Back to you.
Well, I mean, we could have a role. We could have David Hogg playing Alcimus.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and Rodney Dangerfield play Alcimus.
I get no respect.
No respect.
Okay. Verse 30. It became known to Yehuda that Nicanor had come to him with treacherous intent, and he was afraid of him and would not meet him again.
Mm-hmm.
Wakey, wakey.
There you go.
Verse 31. When Nicanor learned that his plan had been disclosed, he went out to meet Yehuda in battle near Kfar Salama. Verse 32, about 500 of the army of Nicanor fell, and the rest fled into the city of Dawit, that's Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, next subsection here, it says Nicanor threatens the temple. Verse 33, After these events, Nicanor went up to Mount Zion. Some of the priests from the sanctuary and some of the elders of the people came out to greet him peaceably and to show him the burnt offering that was being offered for the king. Verse 34. But he mocked them and derided them and defiled them and spoke arrogantly. And in anger he swore this oath, unless Yaudas and his army are delivered into my hands this time, then if I return safely, I will burn up this house. And he went out in great anger. That was verses 34 and 35. Verse 36. At this, the priest went in and stood before the altar and the temple. They wept and said. Now, this is more like a poem.
Okay. Probably a version of the prayer.
Verse 37 and 38.
Yeah. Okay.
This is their prayer.
Yeah, it's a prayer. Yeah.
You chose this house to be called by your name. They're speaking to Yahweh.
Oh, Yahweh.
And
yes.
To be for your people a house of prayer and supplication. Verse 38. Take vengeance on this man and on his army and let them fall by the sword. Remember their blasphemies and let them live no longer. Okay, there's the result.
Imprecatory prayer. Yes.
This is the death of Nicanor, verse 39. Now Nicanor went out from Jerusalem and encamped in Beth Horon, and the Syrian army joined him. Verse 40. Yaudas encamped in Adassa with 3,000 men. Then Yaudas prayed and said, now verse 41, you can reference 2 Kings chapter 19, verse 35. At 2 Kings 19, verse 35. This is his prayer. Verse 41, when the messengers from the king spoke blasphemy, your angel or messenger properly went out and struck down 185,000 of them. Verse 42, so also crush this army before us today. Let the rest learn that he has spoken wickedly against the sanctuary and judge him according to this wickedness.
Mm-hmm.
He's praying in a precatory prayer to Yahweh.
Right. We should be doing more of that. I keep forgetting.
Well, yep. I ask Yahweh to smash the enemy.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Verse 43. So the armies met in battle on the 13th day of the month of Adar. The army of Nicanor was crushed, and he himself was the first to fall in battle. Verse 44, when his army saw that Nicanor had fallen, they threw down their arms and fled.
Yeah, they wouldn't get paid. Right? He had all the money.
Yep. Yeah.
Right?
Feet don't fail me now.
Right?
Remember that?
Yep.
In all the old movies. Feet don't fail me now. All right, verse 45.
Hightail it. Yep.
The Yaudim, that's the Judahites. Now, they have the Jews in this Bible.
Right.
It's wrong.
It's wrong. Yes, the Judahites.
All right. The Judahites pursued them a day's journey from Adassa as far as Gazara.
Mm-hmm.
And as they followed, they kept sounding the battle call on the trumpets. That
right.
would be
okay.
shofar.
Yeah, here I'd like shofar. To. Right. I'd like to interject here because it's so obvious that the Judahites maintained their separate existence, their separate covenant existence, maintaining their racial purity and their adherence to Yahweh's laws at all times. This the Jews have never done. The Jews are a polyglot, race-mixed entity. So they cannot be the Maccabees. The Jewish people simply cannot be the Maccabees for those two reasons. Okay? So this is proof, the fact that the Jews are a race-mixed and law-denying people, which the Maccabees never were. It's proof that they cannot be descended from the Maccabees. Over to you.
No, they cannot.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot. Verse 46, listen to this. Now, this might apply here, remember?
Okay.
If we get a bunch of these people running, verse 46, people came out of all the surrounding villages of Yehuda. Now, they have Judea in here, but
right.
it's Yehuda. And they outflanked them and drove them back to their pursuers so that they all fell by the sword. Not even one of them was left. Now, you hear that, you listeners in that are of the enemy?
Mm-hmm.
American you hear
Revolution?
That? This yep. is what's coming.
This is what's coming, right?
This is what's coming for you. It's going to be a repeat of this. You should leave this nation now.
Right.
You should book a flight or a boat trip or something. Get you a canoe, but go.
By the way, okay. Donald Trump, the building of the wall in Southern California
that.
Has begun. Has
yep.
begun.
San Diego.
Okay. San Diego. California yep. wall, the California wall is being built as we speak. Back to you.
They got about 1 mile done, yeah. and they got thousands of miles to
right.
go.
Yeah, right. It's going to take 50 years.
But they're not making a ramshackle wall like they
no,
did
it's,
before.
Right.
This is going to be a major undertaking.
Right. And the
some contractor is going to make big
oh, yeah,
bucks.
Some Jewish contractor is going to make big
sure.
bucks. Right. That's probably the
and
only reason why the wall is being built.
Their people will be in Mexico.
Right.
Eh, senor, you want to buy a key to the hidden door? We got
right.
hidden doors.
And the secret tunnels?
And for 500 pesos, we will give you a key and give you a map.
1,000 smackers.
This
1,000
is a
smacker.
Secret. A secret door. Right.
Freedom.
Yeah, right.
Welfare benefits. Free education.
Yeah, free car, free rent,
free
free food,
coffee.
Free
oh,
sex.
I'll take that deal. Free coffee. All right. At Starbucks.
Free cervezas. 47.
Yeah, I'd be American.
Let me... Verse 47, then they seized the spoils and the plunder. They cut off Nicanor's head and
Ooh.
The right hand that he had so arrogantly stretched out and brought them and displayed them just outside Jerusalem. Boy, I bet that stunk after a couple
oh,
of days.
Oh, man. Yeah, right.
Anyway, verse 48. The people rejoiced greatly and celebrated that day as a day of great gladness. Verse 49, they decreed that this day should be celebrated each year on the 13th day of Adar. Verse 50, so the land of Yehuda had rest for a few days.
Yeah, for a little while. Yeah.
A little while.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's really, this is a parabolic book in the sense that what's happened here historically is again happening to us today and happens to our people over and over.
It's the old adage of what goes around comes around.
Right. Right. And this is proof, however, that as long as the Israelites obey Yahweh's laws and counsel with him to smash the enemy, he follows through. Okay? The only way, as we found out with the Midianites and the, who was the prophet, the false prophet, Baal, right? Baal and Balaam, and that the only way Israel can be destroyed is if we start race mixing with the other nations.
Yeah.
That was the lesson from that episode, okay? So this.
Well, you remember all the Aryan nations and all the stuff, the motto was racial purity is the key to security.
Right.
Right. Remember that?
Yeah.
How true.
Yeah, how easily we forget.
Well, I haven't forgotten.
No. Well, that's the first time I heard you make that expression. That's a good one. I like it.
Well.
Yeah, let's bring that back. Racial purity is the key to security. Thank you. I like that.
Okay. Well.
It even rhymes.
That's so, when Pastor Butler was still going strong and right? Everything was going right. Before yeah. All the infiltrators got in and destroyed it.
Mm. An ongoing scenario. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
All right. Chapter 8, bro. This
yes,
is good.
Sir. This is a eulogy of the Romans.
Mm.
Okay. Verse 8, or chapter 8, verse 1. Now, Yehudas heard of the fame of the Romans, that they were very strong and were well disposed toward all who made an alliance with them, that they pledged a friendship to those who came to them, and that they were very strong. He had been told of their wars and of the brave deeds that they were doing among the Gauls, that's the French,
right,
how they had defeated them and forced them to pay tribute, and what they had done in the land of Spain, that's Iberia, the land of the Hebrews,
right,
to get control of the silver and gold mines there, and how they had gained control of the whole region by their planning and patience, even though the place was far distant from them. They also subdued the kings who came against them from the ends of the earth until they crushed them and inflicted great disaster on them. The rest paid them tribute every year. Now that's 1, 2, 3, and 4. That's verses because it's all one big paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stop, it breaks the flavor of what it says. Verse 5. They had crushed in battle and conquered Philip and King Perseus of the Macedonians.
Interestingly, my translation has Chittims.
Kittim.
Kittim, and that's the ancient word for the Greeks. Yeah.
That's right. And it has that note in here. I just didn't get to it. You beat me to it.
Okay.
And the others who rose up against them. Verse 6. They also had defeated Antiochus the Great, king of Asia, who went to fight against them with 120 elephants and with cavalry and chariots and a very large army. He was crushed by them. Verse 7. They took him alive and decreed that he and those who would reign after him should pay a heavy tribute and give hostages and surrender some of their best provinces. Verse 8. This is continuing on. The countries of India, Media, and Lydia. These they took from him and gave to King Eumenes. Verse 9. the Greeks, or the Hellenes in Hebrew, planned to come and destroy them. But this became known to them, and they sent a general against the Greeks and attacked them. Many of them were wounded and fell, and the Romans took captive their wives and children. They plundered them, conquered the land, tore down their strongholds, and enslaved them to this day. Now that's 9, 10, and 11. Okay. Or 9 and 10, pardon me. Verse 11. The remaining kingdoms and islands, as many as ever opposed them, they destroyed and enslaved. But with their friends and those who rely on them, they have kept friendship. They have subdued kings far and near, and as many as have heard of their fame have feared them. That's 11 and 12. Because that's one of those deals where you just can't break in the middle. You have to keep reading. Verse 13. Those whom they wish to help and to make kings, they make kings. And those whom they wish, they depose. And they have been greatly exalted. Verse 14. Yet for all this, not one of them has put on a crown or worn purple as a mark of pride. But they have built for themselves a senate chamber, and every day 320 senators constantly deliberate concerning the people to govern them well. That's 14 and 15. Verse 16. They trust one man each year to rule over them and to control all their land. They all heed the one man, and there is no envy or jealousy among them.
Well, this
that
is
proved
right.
not to be true.
Right.
The
right.
Caesars, they were stabbing each other left and right.
Right, right. Well, these are the accounts that they heard, right? You know,
yeah,
the Romans give a good account of themselves.
Oh, Rome is so cool. They really got it together.
They have a democracy.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, right.
Let's see.
Let's not have a democracy.
This as another subsection in chapter 8, an alliance with Rome. In verse 17, you can reference 2 Maccabees 4, verse 11. 2 Maccabees 4, verse 11. So Yehudas chose Eupolemus, son of John, son of Akos, and Jason, that's a Greek name, son of Eleazar, and sent them to Rome to establish friendship and alliance, and to free themselves from the yoke. For they saw that the kingdom of the Greeks was so enslaving Israel completely. Well, they were. They had profaned the temple, etc., etc. Pagan gods they put in the temple. Verse 17 and 18.
Yeah. Yeah, now, for the most part, the Romans had a much more lenient attitude toward the people they subjugated. They would allow them to practice their own religion, although they did have to recognize the Caesar, you know, as the ruler over them. But for the most part, they allowed the people they conquered to keep their own religion, you know, as long as they didn't interfere with the tax collectors.
Well, the main thing about Rome when it first got started, they were good for business.
Yes, they were. Yes.
Everybody prospered. Because there was peace. There wasn't all this
Right. It was a commercial.
Wasting away. That wasn't wasting away of all the resources on endless wars like we have now.
Right, right. It was a
just imagine
economic expansion.
Accomplish.
Yeah.
Imagine what we could accomplish in this nation if we didn't spend all this money on the military-industrial complex so they could
absolutely
fire all these gazillion-dollar rockets at an aspirin factory.
Right, yeah. Elect just Steve imagine. President, folks. He'll straighten this country out. All right. No more unjust taxes.
We could build a whole bunch of great big boats with lots of bunks.
Right.
We could load it up with all the blacks and send them all back in.
There you go. Yeah. And they can make widgets in Africa if you can get them to work. We had
well,
a hard time
can,
to get them to work.
They can eat each other or yeah,
right.
You know, let them have all the AK-47s they want.
Right. And each tribe will annihilate the other tribe.
We be Kang.
Right.
We was Kang.
Yeah. But here, I'm glad you brought that up. This economic expansion was relatively peaceful in the beginning, right? But it got more. And taxes come into play here, and inflation as well, because there was funny business going on in Rome by clipping the coins. Right.
Yep.
And then
right.
And then the taxes increased because they needed to have armies to preserve the peace.
Who
quote unquote.
Did they allow into the Roman Empire? Who did they allow in?
Well, they brought slaves from other nations.
No. Who did they allow in? Who did they let? Do
you mean
business?
Jews.
Ah, you get the cigar.
Right.
Ringy, dingy, dingy.
Puff, puff, puff. Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Edomites in
go.
Those days.
It's
they
same,
were Edomites.
Same. And they did the same thing. They fomented unnecessary wars. They gutted the military. And stole the money. They did the same thing to them that they have done now.
Right.
They have done this to every white nation.
Right.
Every time we let them in, that's what they do.
Yeah, Brother Abear in the chat room.
Our people let them in because they bribe our officials, and they're so greedy and corrupt, they will allow these parasites to destroy the rest of us.
Right.
They don't care as long as they're living in their mansions and have
sure.
all their mistakes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And servants and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't care about the people that they consider peasants. That's the rest
right.
of them.
That's right.
Factory workers and miners and farmers and such.
Yeah. Yeah. Brother Abear put a couple of links in the chat room here. Monday evening, it's got to be a week from the 11th. This Monday is the 11th. The 18th is the 91st day, a soldier Sabbath, a good day to pray imprecatory prayers. Thank you, brother. That's a good, very good point. And then
those are all marked on our calendar.
On our calendar, right. Yes, yes. And, you can get one of those calendars directly from yours truly, by sending a donation of $20 or more to ANP, Post Office Box 41, 1373, Chicago, Illinois, 60641. And we'll have the link up on Eurofolk Radio within the next couple of days. I've been working with Paul to get that straightened out so that we can have the link to the calendar. And by the way, the information on those calendars is really fantastic. It's the story of the prophetic Maseroth and the prophetic meaning of those symbols in the sky that were designed by Adam, Seth, and Enoch. The original zodiac is Adamic, and it refers to our Lord and Savior, Yahshua Messiah. It's a prophecy of his lifetime. That's what the original zodiac is about. And Brother Abear depicts that very well, really well. So this calendar is worth keeping as a booklet on that subject. It really is, okay? Now, he says here, January 1st evening is the memorial and celebration day of the defeat of Nicanor. Okay? Mm-hmm. So this is all historical stuff, folks. I mean, this book of Maccabees is truly historical. I don't see any way that anybody can say that these historical books are in any way invalid, just as the rest of the Bible is totally valid, especially the prophecies, right?
We get historical and they get hysterical.
There you go. Right? Good one. You get five merits.
Yeah, there we go.
All right.
This is a marvelous calendar. It's got all the feast days on it. You won't miss the feast days. They're clearly marked sundown to sundown. I really, you know, it's beautiful. It really is. It's not a little cheap little homebrew production. It's professionally printed and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Heavy
glossy paper.
Glossy,
heavy paper. Yeah.
Really
it compares actually better than most of the glossy calendars that are out there, you know, commercially. It's actually better quality than most calendars that are out there. So it's actually a work of art with all of the depictions of the, you know, the constellations and their meaning. Well done, Brother Abraham. Well done. All right.
Sure.
Yeah, and then the Feast of Hanukkah. I don't know. We haven't gotten there yet in the calendar. I haven't looked ahead, but so-called Hanukkah Festival of Lights, right? Which we'll get into.
Okay. Feast of the Dedication.
Dedication. Oh, the Jews call it the Festival of Lights. Yeah.
Well, that's they lie.
I get
it's
slapped.
The festival, a feast of dedication, and Yeshua Messiah was there celebrating that feast.
Yes, he did.
So that is not a Jewish holiday.
Right. It's a Jew.
They try to steal it.
Right? They wouldn't do that, would they?
Surely not.
All right.
Oh, they want to claim everything. Verse 19. They went to Rome, a very long journey, and they entered the Senate chamber and spoke as follows. Verse 20. Yehuda, who is also called Maccabeus, and his brothers and the people of Judea.
Right.
Okay.
Judah, really. Yehuda.
Of Yehuda, have sent us to you to establish alliance and peace with you so that we may be enrolled as your allies and friends. Verse 21, the proposal pleased them. Verse 22, you can reference 1 Maccabees chapter 14, verse 18, 1 Maccabees 14, 18. And this is the copy of the letter that they wrote in reply on bronze tablets and sent to Jerusalem to remain with them there as a memorial of peace and alliance. This is what they wrote, verse 23. May all go well with the Romans and with the nations of Judea, or Yehuda, okay, at sea and on land forever, and may sword and enemy be far from them. Verse 24, if war comes first to Rome or to any of their allies in all their dominion, the nation of Yehuda shall act as their allies wholeheartedly as the occasion may indicate to them. That's 24 and 25. Verse 26, to the enemy that makes war, they shall not give or supply grain, arms, money, or ships, just as Rome has decided. And they shall keep their obligations without receiving any return. In other words, if you're in alliance, you're in alliance. We're not going to pay you to be allies. You're an ally.
Right.
Okay. Verse 27, In the same way, if war comes first to the nation of Yehuda or Judea, the Romans shall willingly act as their allies as the occasion may indicate to them. Verse 28, and to their enemies there shall not be given grain, arms, money, or ships, just as Rome has decided, and they shall keep these obligations to do so without deceit. Verse 29, thus, on these terms, the Romans make a treaty with the Judean people, okay, the Yahudim,
right,
those who praise Yah, okay, that's what that means.
Right.
Doesn't mean Jews. It's not Yehudi. It's Yahudim. Two words. Praisers of Yah. Verse 30. If, after these terms are in effect, both parties shall determine to add or delete anything, they shall do so at their discretion, and any addition or deletion that they may make shall be valid. Verse 31. Concerning the wrongs that King Demetrius is doing to them, we have written to him as follows. Why have you made your yoke heavy on our friends and allies, the Judeans? Now that's the Yahudim again. If now they appeal again for help against you, we will defend their rights and fight you on sea and on land. This starts, how far along? We got 9:38.
We got 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. First subsection of chapter 9. Bacchides returns to Judea. When Demetrius heard that Nicanor and his army had fallen in battle, he sent Bacchides and Alcimus again into the land of Yehuda a second time, and with them the right wing of the army. They went by the road that leads to Gilgal and encamped against Meseloth in Arbela, and they took it and killed many people. Verse 3, in the first month of the 152nd year, now that's 160 B.C., okay, they encamped against Jerusalem. Verse 4. Then they marched off and went to Berea with 20,000 foot soldiers and 2,000 cavalry. Verse 5. Now Yehuda was encamped in Elasa, and with him were 3,000 picked men. Verse 6. When they saw the huge number of the enemy forces, they were greatly frightened, and many slipped away from the camp until no more than 800 of them were left. Ooh, that's not good.
Mm-hmm.
The cowards took off.
Right. Well, as has happened often in the past.
Yeah.
In Israelite history. But it didn't matter, because if you have Yahweh on your side, well, we can defeat anybody. However, I think what's being expressed here, it's quite possible that Judah Maccabeus was getting tired of fighting. I'm not sure he did the right thing by sending these emissaries to Rome to make a deal with them, okay? Because we're not supposed to have these covenants.
It backfired.
It definitely backfired.
Later on. Yeah. Later on,
yes. Yeah. You know, now remember when Alexander came into Judah, not Judea, Judah, the land of Judah, he spared the land of Judah. Because I think it's in 2 Maccabees where this is related, where he actually saw the prophecies of Daniel and recognized himself as the third beast, right? And he said, wow, this book is fantastic. I'm not going to make war against you people, you Israelites, but I am going to destroy Tyre, which is exactly what he did. But he spared Israel. He made no war against Israel. And I think they should have handled it the same way with the Romans. Okay? Anyway, that's just my opinion. Hard to say whether Judah Maccabeus was, you know, losing his strength, getting old. Hard to say, right? But
tells that here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, verse 7. When Judah saw that his army had slipped away and that the battle was imminent, he was crushed in spirit, for he had no time to assemble them.
Mm-hmm.
He became faint, but he said to those who were left, "Let us get up and go against our enemies. We may have the strength to fight them." Verse 9. But they tried to dissuade him, saying, "We do not have the strength. Let us rather save our own lives now, and let us come back with our kindred and fight them. We are too few." Verse 10. But Yehuda said, "Far be it from us to do such a thing as to flee from them. If our time has come, let us die bravely for our kindred and leave no cause to question our honor."
There you go.
Okay. And now we go into the subsection, the last battle of Yehuda. Verse 11. Then the army of Bacchides marched out from the camp and took its stand for the encounter. The cavalry was divided into two companies, and the slingers and the archers went ahead of the army, as did all the chief warriors. Verse 12. Bacchides was on the right wing, flanked by the two companies. The phalanx advanced to the sound of the trumpets, and the men with Yehuda also blew their trumpets. Verse 13. The earth was shaken by the noise of the armies, and the battle raged from morning until evening. Verse 14. Yehuda saw that Bacchides and the strength of his army were on the right. Then all the stout-hearted men went with him, and they crushed the right wing, and he pursued them as far as Mount Azotus. Now that's 14 and 15. Verse 16. When those on the left wing saw that the right wing was crushed, they turned and followed close behind Yehuda's and his men. Verse 17. The battle became desperate, and many on both sides were wounded and fell. Verse 18. Yehuda also fell, and the rest fled. Verse 19. Then Jonathan and Shimon took their brother Yehudas and buried him in the tomb of their ancestors at Modain, and wept for him. All Israel made great lamentation for him. They mourned many days and said, now that's 19 and 20. Verse 21, how is the mighty fallen, the Savior of Israel? Verse 22, now this is like in Kings and Chronicles. Now the rest of the acts of Yehudas and his wars and the brave deeds that he did and his greatness have not been recorded, but they were very many. But in Kings stuff, it said they are recorded in the book of Kings, yada, yada, yada. Okay. Well, they didn't do that here. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that he did that didn't get written down.
Right, right. Well, the Israelites were under tremendous assault from this time forward, and it's quite possible that even if they did record these history books, they were destroyed by Herod. The entire pedigree of the Israelites was destroyed by Herod. So who knows what else he destroyed, okay?
Right. So, okay. Brother Hebert, he did not pray to Yahweh before the final battle.
Right.
That may have been why he was defeated. Brother Hebert brought that point up.
Yes. Yeah. He might have been too weary. Right.
Well, it doesn't say that he did it.
Right.
In this book.
It doesn't say it. Yeah, right. That's probably why.
We don't know. But
good point, brother. Yep.
This is, he's paying attention. This is Jonathan succeeds Yehuda. Verse 23. After the death of Yehuda, the renegades emerged in all parts of Israel. All the wrongdoers reappeared. Verse 24. In those days, a very great famine occurred, and the country went over to their side. Verse 25. Bacchides chose the godless and put them in charge of the country. Verse 26. They made inquiry and searched for the friends of Yehudas and brought them to Bacchides, who took vengeance on them and made sport of them. In other words, public torture. That's what they mean when they say make sport of. Verse 27. So there was a great distress in Israel, such as has not been since the time that prophet ceased to appear among them. Verse 28. Then all the friends of Yehudas assembled and said to Jonathan, since the death of your brother Yehuda, there has been no one like him to go against our enemies and Bacchides and to deal with those of our nation who hate us. Stop right here. Mm-hmm. Don't we have people of Israel today in this nation and in Britain and in France and in Germany and in Sweden that are enemies of true Israel, even though they're of the same race? Don't we have those people?
Sad to say.
We sure do.
It's true.
Same then, same now. Verse 30. Now, therefore, we have chosen you today to take his place as our ruler and leader to fight our battle. Verse 31. So Jonathan accepted the leadership at that time in place of his brother, Yehudas. Now we go into another subsection, which is very long. I don't think we're going to get much of it done today. We only have about 10 minutes.
Okay.
All right, we should not get into that. This is a really long section.
Right, and it's intense stuff. It's very intense stuff.
Yeah.
So, actually, why am I thus put into the chat room a link? I have forgotten that I had written about the intertestamental period. And because I was trying to find out who the traitors were, right? Who the traitors were. And let me quickly read from this. This is the background, ancient history, which is also between the testaments, the story of. And so maybe, because I had written this maybe 10 years ago, and I used the word Judea. I shouldn't have used the word Judea in this section here. But Alexander the Great, background to the New Testament, Alexander the Great died in 323 BCE. I must be quoting somebody here because I wouldn't use BCE. Before Christ, not before the Common Era. That's a Jewish invention. After his death, there was a period of intense political infighting among the possible successors of Alexander, who did not name a successor before his death, nor did he have a son who was a viable candidate for king. The period after Alexander's death is known as the Diadochen period, Diadochos successor. That's the Greek word for successor. Eventually, Alexander's unified empire was broken into smaller Hellenistic kingdoms, just as prophesied by Daniel, right? Well, and that prophecy was made, before 500 BC or around 500 BC?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Judea, now, this is a quotation, but Yehuda, was originally became part of the Ptolemaic kingdom, but was incorporated into the Seleucid kingdom. Now they were fighting each other. These Greek kingdoms were fighting each other. Until 198 BC under Antiochus III, after one of the many armed conflicts between the two kingdoms. Succeeding Antiochus III was Seleucus IV Eupator, which we mentioned. Again, this is historically accurate stuff, folks. All right? Yeah, the Book of Maccabees and all the Bible books are historically accurate when you really read them carefully. About this time, Rome was beginning to make its presence felt in the eastern Mediterranean. Rome had taken control of Italy by the middle of the 3rd century BC. During the latter half of the 3rd century BC, I'm quoting somebody here, but it's not in italics for some reason. Rome engaged in a conflict for supremacy with Carthage. Now, who were the Carthaginians? Pastor Steve. They were also white.
Okay. Oh, absolutely.
They were white.
Absolutely.
Right? And so but they were contending with, actually they were, weren't they an outpost of Tyre? Carthage, as I recall. And so the First Punic War, 264 to 41 BC, Rome fought Carthage for control of Sicily and won. In the Second Punic War, 218 to 201 BC, Rome and Carthage fought again, and Hannibal invaded Italy. All these are brother against brother. It's white people battling white people for domination. And as I was saying earlier, the downfall of Rome was the military expansion and the taxation of the indigenous Romans became excessive, which began to, people who were being heavily taxed, even the senators themselves, began to conspire against one another so that the one group would have to pay less tax than the other group, right? And here we see that the internal conflicts begun as a result of too much expansionism and internal taxation. What have we got in America today?
Mm-hmm. Taxation without representation.
There you go. There you go. And the money's being given to non-Americans, illegal aliens to boot. How can a country survive under those conditions? It cannot. So we had better start praying to Yahweh to protect America, protect the remnant, at the very least to protect the remnant, which, as Brother Avery pointed out, Maccabeus forgot to do in the last battle.
I pray every night.
Yes.
To save the remnant and to smash our enemies.
Yeah. Amen. I pray every morning. So we've got morning and evening covered. All right. And every one of us needs to pray that same type of imprecatory prayer that, and Yehuda Maccabeus, he was religious about praying before a battle. But this particular battle, in chapter, what chapter are we in here? 8 or 9, I forget.
We're in chapter 9.
Okay. On this particular occasion, he forgot to invoke the presence of Yahweh. Okay. Now, I can only speculate as to a potential better move. I think he should have, when it was obvious that the Greeks were going to be defeated and the Romans were going to come in and make war against the Greeks anyway. So The best policy would have been to let the Greeks and Romans duke it out and invoke Yahweh to give the Romans, you know, other business, like Alexander had other business and didn't attack Israel. And that's how they should have prayed to avoid being overthrown by the Romans. Because like I said, that sending these emissaries to make a covenant with the Romans is the wrong way to go. In Deuteronomy chapter 20, Joshua, the law of engagement is given, where Joshua was told, whenever you go into a country to take possession of it, you offer them peace. Of course, with the Canaanites being accepted, the Israelites were told to destroy these Canaanites to the last person.
And yep, women, children, dogs, cats, butterflies, everything. Horses, cows, right. Whatever.
We were instructed to annihilate them, but we failed to do it. Okay. Because we weren't bloodthirsty killers that enjoyed killing babies like the Jews do in Israel today, right? Another proof that we're not the same people. So,
right.
This was and what the rules of engagement were. Jonathan was to offer the non-Canaanite nations that he encountered, which would include the Philistines, who were a Hamitic people, but they were not Canaanites. Okay. And so we were to offer terms of peace, and if they accepted those terms of peace, they would live under tribute to us. That's how it was done. And maybe Yehuda Maccabeus forgot that this is the rules of engagement. Hard to say, but it's very obvious that he was getting tired of fighting, right? And, it's kind of like Errol Flynn. What was the famous movie where Robin Hood. So he was becoming like Robin Hood, and he forgot to invoke the name of Yahweh before this last battle. So we cannot forget to include the presence of Yahweh in everything we do.
Yep.
Rule number one.
That is so true. That's why it troubles me when I hear a lot of guys say, what are we going to do? What is Yahweh going to have us do? That's the question. Under his direction, if we take it upon ourselves, it's going to be presumptiveness, like in the Bible where they were told, don't go up the mountain. Yahweh is not with us.
Right.
And they presumed to go up the mountain to fight the Amorites, and they got their butts kicked.
Right.
They got destroyed.
Yeah.
And if we do that, if we are presumptive, and we take it on ourselves.
Yeah, and we become arrogant and lack humility, then this is what happens to us, folks. This is what happens
to us.
All right, thanks for listening. This Maccabees study gets better and better as we understand these are our ancestors, and we must learn from this history. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. See you next time.
Shalom aleichem.